Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
We have a guest here, which is the lovely Ian Campbell. Good afternoon, Ian.
Good afternoon, Maggie.
Now, Ian, you're going to talk to us. You've got some connections with Ukraine. Is that what you were going to talk to us about that?
Indeed, I have.
Yep.
Obviously, the Ukraine is foremost in most people's mind at the moment with the war raging over there.
Yep.
But what most people don't know or realise is that there used to be quite a large British enclave.
Really?
In Ukraine.
Oh.
Or to be more precise, Welsh enclave.
Right.
That makes it even more intriguing.
Yeah. And it all starts with a young man called John Hughes. Look you, boyo.
Yes.
Who in 1835-40, although he was illiterate, he was generally accepted as being the UK's leading authority on the manufacture of steel.
Okay.
Ah, right. Okay, yes.
Okay.
It's going to make sense.
Yep. And in 1860, he was invited by the Imperial Russian government to open a steel-making complex in Russia.
Right.
And he was given free rein as to where he would establish this place.
Mm.
And he chose the Donbass region.
Ah, now we've all heard of that.
You've
quite
all
recently.
Heard of that now, haven't you?
Yes.
And the reason why he selected the Donbass region was because both coal and iron ore were readily available.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Usually you need a good source of coal to start a steelworks, which is why they had so many in Wales, of course.
That's right. And so he recruited about 80 guys from Merthyr Tydfil. Which probably left Merthyr Tydfil a bit thin on the ground.
Yes, I would have said so.
And they set off to this area in the Donbass, which was basically totally uninhabited at that time.
Mm.
And they slowly built up this huge complex of steelworks and coke works. And he founded the city of Huzovka, which means town of Hughes.
Oh!
In Russian.
Oh, right.
Okay. And the steelworks prospered, and it specialised in the manufacture of very high-quality railway lines, which it exported all over the world.
Ah, massive demand for them at that time, I imagine, too.
And the first railway tracks in the Ukraine were laid in 1866.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were of my grandfather's manufacture or not, I don't know, but they were. The other thing that John Hughes did was to found a football team, or two football teams, so they could play each other.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not much about having just one football team, is it?
No. And those football teams developed, and they survived all the vicissitudes of what happened in the subsequent years, and of course the team still exists, and it's known as Shakhtar Donetsk.
Right.
And that was Shakhtar being Russian for minor.
Ah.
Ah, intriguing.
Right.
Okay.
Right, so
this John Hughes was your relative?
No. In 1890, my great uncle James was appointed chief engineer of the whole complex.
Gotcha.
Now, how one Scotsman got on with 200 Welshmen, I don't know, but anyway. But very sadly, his eldest son died in one of the cholera epidemics, which are absolutely rife out there.
Yes.
And Auntie Joyce, great Auntie Joyce, refused to stay there any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1899, he offered his job to my grandfather.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
So things moved along, and one interesting little story that came out of that was that in 1902, a young man was brought to him. He was a half-trained metal worker, and he wished to continue and complete his metal working courses. So grandfather said, right, 5 days you will work in the factory, the sixth day you will be my office boy and tidy everything up and file everything away. And that was agreed. The young man's name was Nikita Khrushchev.
Ah, yes. Now, he's another famous name from history.
He is indeed.
Mm.
And my grandfather pulled, apparently, so he told me, pulled this book down from the shelves behind him and said, write my name in this book. not your name, but I want to know that you're literate. And if I ask you to write my name, then you'll have to be literate. And we have the very... I know you can wave it in front of the microphone if you like.
Please do, people can see it then,
But,
Right. Oh, I see. Oh, yes. Now, that's is that actually Cyrillic scripts? Kind of, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Very good.
And that shows some quite clever penmanship as well.
It does. You see that it's all beautifully drawn out and lines and...
Yeah, it's all about almost the way they used to mark out the technical drawings.
That's right.
Yes. Wow, that's quite something. Yeah. I'll take a photo of that later and go up on our website. But that's superb. So that's Khrushchev's signature. Well, that's... No. He wrote it.
It's my grandfather's name.
But Khrushchev wrote it.
By Khrushchev.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's quite something amazing. To hang on to, isn't it?
Certainly is. Now, question for you, Ian.
Good, yes.
Did these Welsh steel engineers speak Welsh, or were they speaking in English largely? Or did they have to learn... Well, it was Russian then, wasn't it, they had to learn?
It was Russian, yeah. I don't know, to be honest.
I know, because, interestingly, if you go to some parts of South America, there were a lot of Welsh miners went down there, and there's actually a Welsh-speaking enclave in some parts of South America.
Well, I've spent a lot of my life in Chile. And the real Welsh-speaking lot are actually in Patagonia,
right,
in Argentina.
Right.
Where they speak Spanish and Welsh.
Well, that's an anomaly that you wouldn't expect to find. So I wonder if the same thing occurred in Ukraine with these. I imagine there must have been some Welsh speakers amongst them.
Yes. I think almost certainly.
Yeah. Because
Welsh, Russian, that'd be interesting.
Well, yeah, but...
Russian with a Welsh accent, yeah, of course.
I mean, to build a complete steelworks complex from the middle of, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
From scratch.
Does much of it survive, and not with not the war going on there notwithstanding, did it survive the years, that place?
I don't know, quite honestly. There's been a lot of research done into it.
Yes, I'm sure.
Jumping ahead a little bit, I used to spend a lot of my life in Kenya. And we were working on several big projects out there. And some of them were government-funded, or government-aided at least. So that meant I used to work with the commercial section of the High Commission.
Right.
Quite closely, and got to know some of them quite well. In fact, the one we worked most closely with eventually ended up as the High Commissioner twice, I think. And then I read in a diplomatic journal that, contrary to the Foreign Office's usual methods of appointing Arabists to Iceland, they had appointed Mr. Simon Hemans to be the first British ambassador to the Ukraine.
Right, okay.
So I wrote to Simon, we'd kept in touch, and he immediately wrote back, and I said, here's a bit of history which would be useful for you. He immediately wrote back and said, you must get in touch with the Archivist Department in Glamorgan, because they, in conjunction with the Archivist Department in Kyiv, have been awarded a very large grant to research the history of the Ukraine prior to 1917, because all the written history was destroyed.
Right, yes, of course it would have been, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yes. Now, Ukraine itself is currently experiencing difficulty in maintaining its independence. Was it always independent of Russia? Was it part of Russia?
It's been just about everybody's. I mean, for a long... If you look at the history of Ukraine, it's one continuous war. They were originally part of Poland and Lithuania. It was called the Poland-Lithuania-Ukraine Commonwealth.
Right.
And then it all started to disintegrate. And I've got a page here which I brought, which is quite interesting reading. It's we all think of the armistice, the 11th of the 11th of the 11th, as being the end of the First World War. No. It raged on in Central Europe for years. In 1919, total chaos engulfed Ukraine. Indeed, in the modern history of Europe, no country experienced such complete anarchy, bitter civil strife, and total collapse of authority as did Ukraine at this time.
Oh, dear.
Right.
Six different armies, those of the Ukrainians, the Bolsheviks, the Whites, the Entente, which were the French, the Poles, and the Anarchists, operated on its territory. Kyiv changed hands five times in less than a year.
Wow.
Now,
that's something, isn't it?
Cities and regions were cut off from each other by numerous fronts. Communications with the outside world broke down completely. The starving cities emptied as people moved into the countryside in search of food.
Wow. That's...
The Ukrainian War of Independence of 1917 to 1921 produced the Monika Mashina, Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, which in 1999 merged with the Ukrainian People's Republic and the West Ukrainian People's Republic, which was quickly subsumed by the Soviet Union.
Okay, because...
Good grief.
You hoisted all that on board, of course.
Yeah. As I was growing up, Ukraine was always part of the USSR.
Yes, it was. It was one of the Soviets, one of the first...
And then when the USSR fell apart, or was dismantled, whichever way you want to look at it, it became an independent entity of itself.
But, it did.
Which is currently being disputed. But we're
And it was also, strangely enough, one of the founding nations of the United Nations.
Well, there we are.
Intriguing
stuff. We're going to have to wrap this up a bit, Ian. It's been fascinating stuff. Just quickly, where did the Ukrainian language come from? Because obviously, clearly, they spoke Russian for a lot of the time they were there. Is it a separate language, or is it very, very closely related?
It is closely related to Russian.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, President Zelensky is Russian.
Okay.
And speaks Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on a few crash courses to teach him Ukrainian.
Yeah.
But there've been the mass migration of so many different... I mean, it was all part of the Ottoman Empire at one time.
Mm.
So you've got all these languages piling in together.
Mm.
Whether you can actually discover a route, I'm not sure.
No, okay. But I'm guessing that Ukrainians who are Ukrainian speakers and Russian speakers can understand each other.
I guess
reasonably
they can.
Well, yes. Yeah. I'm not sure about... crossing into Poland, that's quite a different language, but
that is a totally different language.
Yeah,
yes.
Quite different to me, but the
Welsh.
The next door note is
all Welsh.
Well, strangely enough, you can sometimes get by in the language, that a third language that everybody else knows for no good reason,
yes,
and communicate that way, which is why I brought up the thing about South America, because sometimes you can go there and speak in Welsh if you can speak Welsh
in the southern part of Argentina. Yeah. You can probably get away with it. Yeah.
Thank you, Ian. We'll have to get you in again, because there's obviously plenty more to say about
a lot
of your history.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.